In terms of knowing more about memory, I don't know huge amounts about memory, but I needed to get started quickly. I really wanted to have a whole school impact. I suddenly felt a burning desire for languages to be shouting about doing something for the rest of the curriculum, because it actually isn't true. All of the stuff I said, we've gone to coursework and this, that and the other. Pupils do still need to remember things in other subjects. It's just that other subjects, perhaps they don't need it enough for them to really focus on building a skills base. But they do still need it, because they get very stressed when it comes to SATs, and they do suddenly start sitting down and trying to learn things and to revise, and then when they get to GCSEs, they do so again. So I thought, I'm going to... This was last Christmas holiday. This is going to sound very sad. I started following links on the website, and I started reading about memory, and I got hold of a website called howtolearn.com, and it is mentioned in the booklet, www.howtolearn.com. And I read, and it was an American website, and you think, ooh, pinch of salt, I'm going to take this with, because it talks about, you know, amazing things that are going to happen. But somewhat sceptically, I downloaded a kind of book, a 200-page book to read, found it really fascinating, followed some links from there, and then I thought, well, I know that there are loads of other things that I can find out about memory, but actually I haven't got time. I need to get in there. I need to be talking to the Year 9s. It's the right time for me to talk to them. I then need to, you know, go and talk to a Year 8 parents' evening. Then I'm going to talk to Year 11. I wanted somehow languages, the profile of languages, to be raised whole school by me getting in on, hey, languages has got something to tell the whole school about memory and about revision skills and about how to learn. And it was really powerful, actually. And now I am called upon, whenever somebody wants a revision assembly or a how to learn or a learning to learn or something, you know, Mitchell, could you come and talk to parents? I've talked to three year groups of parents this term, all about this stuff. And when I made those booklets, because it says a booklet for parents and students, I didn't make it specially for you, I was practically mobbed at the end. And the first time I only had 30 copies, and there were 140 parents in the audience, so I could tell they were going to want these things as soon as I said, and I have a handout. There were people coming down to get them, which is not because of me. It's because the stuff is obviously fulfilling a need. Parents do feel that they want to be able to help their children learn better and remember stuff, and it was actually responding to an anxiety there that was very real amongst parents. So I did this assembly, which I have no objection to anybody having, but just imagine it. This is me doing this as Year 9. I'm not going to do all of it, but I wanted to sort of set the scene. So I told them a few things we know about the brain. In some ways, they're quite... Well, I'll tell you when they're dodgy anyway. How to activate the brain. This notion, and it's just to give them a snapshot, really. This is to hook them in. In fact, basically, this first slide is to do this, to activate their brains, because... we have, and I think that's what the Key Stage 3 strategy was all about with starters. The whole idea of a starter is that it engages interest, it focuses the mind, it gets everybody just thinking. And if it doesn't do that, well, it's not a good starter. But the new car syndrome is if you decide in your mind, if you're going out to buy a new car, and you're thinking about it, you know, you haven't actually gone away to the garage to buy it, but you're thinking, I think I'm going to have a blah, blah, blah. I think I'm going to have a red one. All of a sudden, once you have made that decision, everything you see is red. All the cars on the road are suddenly red. And you see a million red cars because your brain has been switched on to red, to the notion of red. And that is a bit of our brain, I'm going to not point to where it is, but it's in here somewhere, called the reticular activating system. And as students... they need to be aware of it. But as teachers, we need to be aware that in the first 2 or 3 minutes in the lesson, we need to activate that bit of their brains. We need to switch them on. Because if the lesson starts with, you know, them just kind of mooching and still talking about lunch, and then there's a kind of, oh, well, today we're going to learn, and everyone's going, yeah, boring, boring. Actually, they're not going to ever have a big sort of impact start to their learning. And that's the switch-on button, and we have to find some way of doing it. Ways of doing that are humour, the humorous, the bizarre, the active, the strange, the interactive. It's got to be something where the pupils are all drawn in. They all have to be pulled in to actively thinking. So that was one thing. And I just told them about that to really get them thinking. The magic number 7. This is actually rubbish. But again, I don't tell them that it's true. After a while, I tell them that it's kind of urban myth. But the notion is that in Sweden, they had number plates that were 7 digits. And then they ran out, like we did, and we had to change our system. And so they put an 8th one on. Or an 8th or a 9th, I don't know. And then all of a sudden, there was apparently a massive explosion in the crime rate. Crime really went up. And they investigated what on earth could be happening. Why, you know, the malaise in society, all of a sudden, where's it come from? And apparently they discovered that it was just because people weren't able to remember more than 7 bits of information at once. And so they weren't able to report these getaway cars. I mean, ridiculous story. It's not true. But again, there's a bizarre, there's a humorous, there's a switch on the reticular activating system, pull everybody in. Apparently there's something magic about 7, remembering 7 things. We could try an experiment with kind of phone numbers and things like that. Mobile phone numbers, really quite challenging for all of us to remember. We have to work hard. They don't just go in like that. Whereas my landline number, you know, I've moved house about 5 times in the last 5 years and I know them all. Still, I know them all. Whereas my mobile number, I really did have to try. So there's something about that. And then there's primacy and recency. We remember stuff that we've heard at the start, and we remember things that we've heard at the end, but the middle we find really difficult. If I read you 20 items now, I know without a shadow of a doubt you'd remember the first 5 and the last 5. And depending on how good your retention, your memories are, somewhere in the middle, you know, someone might remember all 20 if they were really good. You know, others of you would be anywhere between 3 and 10 out of those middle 10. And things get lost in the middle. And you can share that with pupils and say, and that can affect teaching in a couple of ways. For example, you might think, oh my goodness, I've got year 11 double period. I'm going to actually, and that's 100 minutes for us. If they're going to remember the first, and of course we know your natural limits, average concentration span is your age plus or minus 2 years. So if my year 11 pupils are 15, that means 15 minutes or 13 minutes, between 13 and 17 minutes, I'll have lost their concentration. It doesn't get much better for adults either, so I'm on a loser already. But thinking like, what am I going to do with my 100 minutes? If I've only got 15 minutes, and then I might hope that perhaps right at the end of the lesson they'll pick up again, it means I've got an awful lot of downtime in the middle where they're not really going to be actively taking knowledge on. So how am I going to structure my lesson? What am I going to do to make the most out of my time? Well, you know, I've taken with year 11 100-minute lessons. I've taken to, I know, it's the graveyard slot after lunch, isn't it? I've taken to making 4 separate lessons out of it, of 25 minutes. And I actually get them to move. And I do a carousel, we've all heard of those. But I actually get them to see them, and I label them as lesson 1, lesson 2, lesson 3, lesson 4, and they rotate around the room so that they actually do a lesson of 25 minutes. They get up, they move, and in the moving they take in more oxygen and they just have a little stretch, and then they sit back down again, and it's refreshed the concentration. And that's directly influenced by my reading about this. Then you've also got telling them how to revise things and saying, you know, chunk it smaller. And also remember the primacy and recency. If I've given you 20 words to learn, are you going to learn them in the order I've given you them? Or are you going to restructure that to say, well, I know those words, and I know those words, so I'll put those in the middle because I already know those ones, and I know that in the middle, I'm not going to remember so well. I'm going to put the hardest words at the top and the bottom. And then you've got your primacy and recency, and you're noticing, your ability to notice and pick up and engage with is enhanced at the top of a list and the bottom of a list. So put the hard words at the top and bottom and put the easy cognates in the middle. And to actually get pupils to kind of accept that as a theory and to work with it and try it with you and say, oh, yes, that actually works. I do remember those hard words now. So anyway, you can see how the buzzer went before I got through this assembly and how all the heads of year were going, period one's already started. So what's a learning style? I like this definition. It's just a preference. It doesn't mean you can only take the information in that way. In fact, my whole feeling is that we mustn't get hung up on, you know, I know there are schools that go, oh, you know, VAK, and they give people different little cards to hold, and you could go into a class if you're a cover teacher and say, hold your cards up, and you go, all right, I've got kind of 30% visual, ooh, you know, 60% kinesthetic, 10% auditory. Okay, that's interesting. I don't hold with that. I think it's good for the learners to know their natural preferences, but then I want to give them ways of extending into the other areas, because we all need as much of a mixture and a balance as we can. So I tell them that. And then these things, I'm sure I'm not saying that anything that's new here. Visual learners, they obviously learn best by seeing. Not really rocket science there. Yes, they're your ones that like order, that they organise their work. They're the ones where you put their books to the top to mark, because they like to lay their work out nicely, and then you go, oh dear, I can't face that one now. I'm going to have at least 3 bars of chocolate before I get near that book. That's the other ones. But neat and orderly are your visual learners. They're good at speak. They speak quite quickly. They don't have a problem stringing sentences together and coming out with things, sounding quite eloquent. They hold their heads up higher in the classroom. They don't generally tend to go like that. Good spellers. They can plan ahead. That good long-range planners, I mean, I'm not bothered whether they're planning for next week, what they're doing, but in a lesson, they can see where they're... Or in a piece of work, you can see that they've thought about where they're going to go with that piece of work, and have actually thought paragraphing or thought logical sense and hung it together. They memorise by visuals, and they like to know where they're going. But they do have trouble remembering verbal instructions, and I am like this. I don't like people telling me stuff. I immediately want to commit it to paper. I have to be writing things down to feel like I'm learning. Even if someone says to me, and I'm the worst person, someone goes, don't bother about making notes, it's all on my PowerPoint, it's all on my handouts, you can have it at the end. I don't care. It's part of the way I like to learn, is writing stuff down. So that I can recognise myself in that. Auditory, they're happy in the oral environment. They can take in information like that. They do like being entertained with stories that go on. They can keep their focus on you. Auditory learners look at the ear level, you know, so because they are really focusing on the mouth, on the ears, on things that are coming out. They're kind of looking like that. Kinesthetic learners look down, particularly when they communicate with you. They're good storytellers, they might be good joke tellers. I mean, I think we can all spot, they're often the musicians, but not always. But I think people that talk to themselves, you know, yeah, I thought that was just madness, but no, it's good. It's just auditory learning style. I did go on www.howtolearn.com, you can do a simple inventory. It takes about 1 minute. I found it fun to do that. I haven't made all my children do it, or all my pupils, but I found it fun for me, and it showed that I was 30% auditory preference. Not a surprise if you saw me dance this morning, that I'm not at all kinesthetic. No kidding. But visual was the other 60%. I am also quite distracted by noise, but I'm also sometimes very good at filtering it out. So, you know, there's the interplay of things there. May have project, likes jokes better than comics. Okay, and then we've got the kinesthetic ones. They need to move. They're often good at physical coordination. They speak more slowly. Memorises by moving around. Gestures a lot. Doesn't mind clutter. Action words. When they speak, they talk about doing rather than I see what you mean. I see what you mean is a very visual learner thing to say. And we can all do this. This is what I did in the assembly. But we, you know, imagine a bacon sandwich. Some of us will see a picture of one, the last one we ate. I'm a vegetarian, so that was a long time ago. But I can still see, I create a picture in my mind around about there of what one looks like. Other people hear it cooking and other people taste it. And if you're hearing it, the sounds of it making your very strong auditory, these are the ones that perhaps recognise themselves the least. Everyone that's tasted bacon just then in their mouth has got some kinesthetic preference showing through. But, or maybe you're just hungry, you didn't like your lunch. It could be that too. The key, this was the really important bit to me, because all of the stuff so far, I'd heard somewhere. Okay, I maybe collated it and I thought about it a bit more, but I'd heard all that stuff. This was a bit of a killer for me, because The key to get the most out of your learning strategy, and this is regardless of preference, is to match what you do with the way you're going to be tested. And I know talking about testing is just a bit depressing, but there is an end product and we do have to raise attainment. And all of the time we're trying to help learners be successful. Almost, think about it, GCSEs are almost all about producing the written word in response to other written words. And that favours your visual learner. And that's why our visual learners are the ones that achieve fantastic results, and our other ones are the ones that struggle and end up going down into bottom sets. And it's not nice, but actually, those of us who do not have a natural visual learning preference have to develop our visual style. We have to develop our visual memory. If we don't make those links naturally, we have to make them. We have to make it better. And what was really good about reading this was, first, it was depressing, because I recognise why the problems are happening. But then it was like, well, you can actually make your visual memory better. And so this is what I tried to say to the Unite. You can find your visual memory. You can actually make a connection between your eyes and the bit in your brain where your visual memory is stored. And this sounds quite weird. You might have to go on a little believing journey with me in a minute. There is a natural eye-brain connection. Now, I have read a little bit around. I believe that that research is quite robust, actually, that that exists. And we need to find it. Now, if you've ever done a sort of little, you know how we do testing of pupils, and we sometimes do it individually, and we're saying, you know, ¿cómo te llamas? Or whatever we're saying. If they forget the answer, you know, they can't retrieve the information that they're looking for. I mean, I had such an amazing example of this where it was so clear. And I was testing him. He obviously hadn't prepared at all. He'd only busked on what we'd done in the lessons, and he hadn't gone and looked at it at all. I could see that. Quite bright boy, but just hadn't bothered revising. And he sat there, and all of a sudden, his eyes went, and he was looking for that information. Naturally, he was looking for it where his, that is the eye-brain connection. Our visual memories, for all of us, are stored. Most of us are up to the right. And I know that. I know that when I was in exams, I can almost feel myself and remember doing it. In exams, I'm thinking, blah, 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 Hitler, blah, blah, blah. Thinking, oh, what was that date? And you go like that. And you're looking for it. We used to call it mind's eye. That's a kind of old-fashioned term for it. But now they're calling it the natural eye-brain connection. Not all children look up to the right. Some look up and straight on. It's always up, though. Visual is always up. Up to the left can be some. Now, I tried this on my children as a method for finding where theirs are. So you have to ask questions that get them to picture something and describe a picture to you. So I asked her to describe her favourite horse. Not that we have loads of horses, but she goes to ride them at the stable. And, you know, describe to me what it looks like. And immediately, her eyes up to the right, creating a picture and describing what she's seeing. Now, if you take special measures to write information there and put it there and store it there, you can retrieve it more easily. You are helping pupils to make a link with their visual memory. And so I've done it with whole classes. We've all found where our visual memory is. We've had hilarity doing that. And then I've actually given them some strategies to say, for example, you know, 10 words that I want you to learn. And this is all written down in the booklet, so really don't make notes. Unless you like to. And my daughter was getting really, really bad spelling results. She's not a natural visual learner. And so I said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to make little flashcards of the word. So write that word out, big, hold it up there where your visual memory is. It would be up there if you were up there. Hold it up there. Trace over the letters. Look at it for a couple more seconds. Take a picture with your eyes. Your eyes are a camera. Take a picture. Make sure when your eyes are closed, you can still see the word there. Now put it down and move on to the next one. Okay, I did that with her because she was crying about her spellings and everyone else was getting 9 out of 9 and she wasn't. It improved immediately. And now we don't do it. Now she makes the own links by herself. We don't do that the whole time. We did it for about a month and a half. Her spellings have improved. So it's anecdotal plus reading, but I would try it. It's there. Pupils have said, yes, it's made a difference to them. I've seen it make a difference to classes. We do have like if we're having a carousel lesson, then one of the activities will be learning the vocabulary. I try not to set learning homeworks at home because at the moment, pupils aren't that motivated. They don't prioritise it enough because they don't have to hand anything in. So I do written homeworks at home or, you know, speaking. They could speak onto a tape, whatever. A tape. Huh, who uses tapes? Anyway, they do learning activities, 10 minutes solid vocabulary learning using the visual learning method. And it really does work. And they really do improve. Okay, music. I sometimes get them to learn things while they're listening to something baroque-y. You know, I buy into that. I'm not really terribly sure about it, but a bit of Mozart, a bit of Bach, on in the background when they're doing a learning activity. I tell them to use it at home. They can do what they like at home. But it is meant to slow your heart rate to about 70, which is the optimum for taking in information, apparently. It means that you're relaxed but alert. I wonder how many of us can say that about ourselves this afternoon. Okay, so now that assembly, I have to tell you, you know, in my school, assemblies are not viewed like as an amazingly positive thing. People don't go, oh, I really love assemblies. Let's go, everybody. I not only had, and staff, you know, by and large, you don't kind of have staff coming up and going, oh, really great assembly. I loved it. Usually they're still asleep. They take their register and then they go, oh, what have I got to do period one today? And their minds go off. But I had pupils for a week and a half coming past me in the corridor and saying, Liz, I really like that assembly and I've really thought about it. And I think I'm a such and such. And, you know, I'm really working on my... And I tried that on my mum and she's up to the right. All of that kind of stuff. And I think that's good. So, what does it look like in the classroom? Here we go.